Depression can take a toll even beyond the emotional suffering it causes. It can cause people to gain weight, to lose sleep, to become irritable and reckless, even to suffer unexplained aches and pains. Now, a new study in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry assesses the cost in dollars of major depression, and it's a huge number, $210 billion a year. Think of it as the toll society pays for depression and all the associated problems that come with it. Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, and she's with us. Carrie, good to see you.
You too, Anthony.
So, Carrie, beyond this alarming figure, $210 billion a year, what's the headline here?
So there are a couple of interesting sub-headlines in there, Anthony. One is that this number is dramatically up since the recession, up by tens of billions of dollars. The second is that it's particularly up among people over 50.
Interesting. All right. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to just ask you about this figure, $210 billion. What does that actually cover? Is that what we spend treating depression?
So actually, it's more than that. Only about 40% is what we directly spend treating depression. The rest is what we could call elevated costs from comorbidities, comorbidities, so disorders or illnesses or problems that are likelier to affect people who have depression. And they can range from anxiety and other mental illnesses to physical ailments like back pain and migraines.
Well, it just sounds like such a huge cost. So let's introduce Paul Greenberg. He's the lead author of the study. He's head of the healthcare practice at the Boston Economic Consulting Firm Analysis Group. And Paul Greenberg, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you. So one of the things that your study found is that the cost of depression is borne in a big way in the workplace. So tell us the toll that depression takes on the workplace and by extension, the overall economy.
So yes, that's indeed correct. We found that the vast majority of the costs of depression are borne in the workplace. What's new and different here is that in addition to showing at the individual employer level that there are costs being borne every day associated with individuals who don't come into work or who show up at work but are not as productive, those two categories are called absenteeism and presenteeism. We also considered what was the effect of the where we were in the business cycle on depressed individuals.
Mm. And when you say where we are in the business cycle, you're talking about in the wake of the Great Depression?
Of the Great Recession.
Great Recession,
exactly.
Excuse me.
Individuals with depression are very employable when the economy is robust. But what we see when the economy starts turning south, individuals suffering from depression who are employed face a set of labor market conditions that are far less attractive for them than even for their non-depressed counterparts. Hmm. So when there's a recession, not only is it the case that depressed workers end up getting laid off, becoming unemployed to a greater extent, the buffer of part-time work, which is available to many individuals in the labor market at those very difficult moments, is not nearly as widely available to depressed workers.
Yeah. I want to ask you something about what Carrie said, and that is that the rates of depression shot up particularly among people over 50 during the financial crisis. What do we know about that? What explains that? What are your theories about that?
So this is where I need to pause and say I'm the economist studying the data. I'm not the psychiatrist. I'm not the clinician. Mm. That, to me, is another aspect of this study that I think is important, which is that it's by no means a final word. It's something that, in some sense, highlights avenues or opportunities for further research, including exactly the question that you just posed.
Mm. I also want to ask you about this 40% figure. That is that only 40% of the cost is actually directly attributed to depression. So say more about what Carrie was talking about, this idea of comorbidity that accounts for the other 60%.
So that's what's really new and I think important in this study. What we did here was really ask a subsidiary question or two parallel questions, if you will. One was, what is the economic burden of depression in conjunction with what is the economic burden of people suffering from depression? Hmm. And when asked that way, what you immediately see is that individuals suffering from depression impose costs on society that exceed the depression-specific costs.
Yeah, I see.
So, Paul, I would just push back a little bit on that, actually. It certainly rings true to me that depression can act as a sort of a force multiplier, that if you're depressed, you're likelier to be really bothered by the pain of your back or your migraine or made even more intensely anxious, for example. But can those costs really be counted as costs of depression?
Right. So we think yes, and we've done statistical work to, in essence, match individuals with and without depression to see what sort of cost elevations exist, not only, of course, related to the depression itself, but also related to some of those other categories that you correctly alluded to, both on the physical disorder side, things like back pain or migraines, as well as on the psychiatric disorder side.
Paul, you've been studying the economic toll of depression for more than two decades. Why? I mean, what do you hope the research will change, if anything?
Each time we study it, we learn new things. And each time we learn new things, we like to think that by publicizing it, by having these kinds of conversations, we continue to break down that stigma that certainly 20 years ago and 30 years ago and earlier than that was enormous. There's still a significant stigma associated with any psychiatric disorder. We don't see parity with respect to mental illness compared to physical illnesses in terms of how people respond. And so in analyzing these things, from a research perspective, I think there's always new insights to be learned from data. But also the story changes over time.
I mean, Carrie, one of the issues Paul mentioned, parity, and this raises questions about parity of insurance coverage, right?
That's right. So parity means, you know, basically equality. And there are both federal and state laws that say that you have the right to get mental health treatment at the same level that you get physical health treatment. But I think what many people find in practice is that, in fact, it's much harder to get that treatment. And so I think one of the upshots of this study is also that when you see the enormity of the burden, it raises the question of, well, how then can we get better treatment for this disorder that is costing us so much?
That's exactly right. But I would also add that there's another aspect to parity that, at least from an economic perspective, I think of, and that is the parity that has to do with different payer responses to the very same kind or to different kinds of conditions. To be more specific, in the case of physical disorders, those might be cancer, heart disease, diabetes, you know, there's so many. Mm-hmm. Payers are certainly interested in containing costs, but not to the point where they demand cost offsets that would justify, from an economic perspective, one or another type of treatment. In the case of mental illness, in many instances, the kinds of investigations that certainly we're asked to do and others like us take us down a path for payers to ask the question, what costs are being saved even as we're investing in the treatment of a depressed individual?
Really important questions, important information. Paul Greenberg is head of the healthcare practice at the Boston economic consulting firm Analysis Group. He's also the lead author of a study on the economic toll of depression just published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry. Paul Greenberg, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Thank you, as always, Carrie.
You're welcome, Anthony.
And listeners, you can find a link to Carrie's Common Health post on the study at radioboston.org.
Well, coming up, the story of a Cambridge woman who decided to throw out her keyboard and pick up a hammer. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.